Every mental health complication or diagnosis is increasing, and I've worked with different scientists and done a lot of experimentation on myself, having grown up with multiple depressive episodes every year to see if there are root causes that we can address. And so I'll just throw out a few things that have been very, very helpful. First, there's brain stimulation. When I did this, I had months of no anxiety. Then there's something called vagus nerve stimulation, and one of the most heavily cited scientists of the last 30 years has seen a wild collection of benefits.
Let's talk about that.
Tim Ferriss has become a performance hacking expert after speaking with over 800 influential voices on his podcast.
Now he's taking the most valuable frameworks and techniques to help you
optimize productivity, health, and performance.
Tim, the variety of things that you write about, talk about, is so wide. So what is the question that most people should ask you?
How do you break down complicated subjects and accelerate your ability to learn? Because time is one of our most valuable non-renewable resources. And so I have a framework that you can apply to any subject matter, which consists of the 80-20 principle, which is picking the 20% to focus on that will give you 80% of what you want. For instance, there's hundreds of thousands of words you could learn in Spanish, but with the most frequently used 1500, you can get to reasonable conversational fluency in almost any language in 8 to 12 weeks. And if you figure that out, you're ahead of 99.9% of the world.
And what do you think is the question most people want to ask?
Welcome to Pod Summarizer. Visit our website and summarize your favorites podcasts.
Ask you.
So there's a lot of questions around mental health, and I feel like I have a moral obligation to help people because I was sexually abused by a babysitter's son on a weekly basis. I was this close to killing myself, and it can have a lot of effects, but these are things that you can slowly chip away at, and instead of feeling like you're held captive by them, feel like you can take the pain and make it part of your medicine. So
I see messages all the time in the comment section that some of you didn't realize you didn't subscribe. So if you could do me a favor and double check if you're a subscriber to this channel, that would be tremendously appreciated. It's the simple, it's the free thing that anybody that watches this show frequently can do to help us here to keep everything going in this show in the trajectory it's on. So please do double check if you subscribed, and thank you so much, because in a strange way, you're part of our history and you're on this journey with us, and I appreciate you for that. So yeah, thank you. Tim, you're a remarkably interesting individual, in part because the variety of things that you write about, talk about, clearly have deep curiosity in, is so wide that you're hard to put into any particular box. So my first question to you is, how do you think about the work you do, and how do you sort of like self-define, if you do at all, who you are and what your mission is?
I think of myself as a self-experimenter / student and teacher, in that order. The purpose, though, ultimately is to try to find simplicity through complexity or topics that can be complicated, and then provide some type of recipe or algorithm that people can test with low risk and hopefully a decent amount of upside.
We're going to talk about a lot of different things today, so it's probably a good place to start, which is learning how to learn. And especially in a world that's changing at such speed, there's a lot of people that are being forced into relearning of some sort, whether it's professionally or in other domains. So meta-learning, I've never heard this term before. What is meta-learning, and how do I learn how to learn better? I would love to, because I spend so long, as you do, speaking to really interesting people. And I sometimes worry that some of that information's being wasted.
Yeah. The basic idea is this, that rather than treat different subjects or fields as these silos that need to be figured out independently, how can you develop just a broad framework that you can apply to any subject matter? And the acronym that I generally recommend folks, DSSS, deconstruction, selection, sequencing, stakes. There's deconstruction, which is taking a fairly ambiguous goal, like learn to swim or learn Japanese. None of those are actually very descriptive. So deconstructing any one of those is taking, let's just use learn to swim as an example, and breaking it down into constituent parts. And you can do that very effectively with the help of an expert. You can try to do it yourself. But for instance, I mean, if you want to find a silver medalist from the Olympics 2 Olympics ago, you can probably get on a Zoom call with them for $100 an hour, maybe $50 an hour, you do have access to world-class talent, then they would help you figure out, all right, there are all these different possible components. When you get to the next part, which is selection, you're picking the 20%. This is the 80-20 principle, right? Pareto's law. So you're picking the 20% that will give you 80% of what you just use language learning in that case. Well, you can very easily find word frequency lists. So for any given language, like Spanish, sure, or in English, hundreds of thousands of words you could learn. But with the most frequently used 1,500, you can get to reasonable conversational fluency in almost any language in 8 to 12 weeks, without question, if you approach it methodically. But you need the right material first. And then the next S is sequencing, putting it in the right order. And I feel like this is the magic sauce that gets lost a lot, which is, what is a logical sequence for learning any given skill? What do you practice first? So in the case of swimming, for instance, forget about breathing. Like, you need to figure out, like, fuselage right, fuselage left, and gliding, kicking off a wall in the shallow end of a pool before you ever think about breathing, and getting comfortable putting your head underwater, et cetera, et cetera. So there's the deconstruction, selection, sequencing, and then the last S stands for stakes, which means incentives. So how do you ensure that you will do actually what it is you say you're committing to doing? If more information were the answer, we'd all be billionaires with six-pack abs. So information is clearly not sufficient. It's necessary, but not sufficient. Incentives drive behavior change. So you need good intentions are not enough. Even a system is not enough. You need strong incentives. So, right, you could give $500 to a friend, or $100, whatever. The amount doesn't really matter. And if you don't do what you say you're going to do, they donate it to, like, your most hated political candidate in your name. That's another one that I've seen work really well. That's it. That DSSS. Deconstruction, selection, sequencing, stakes. And if you just check those boxes moving that order, your ability to learn will hockey stick in a really meaningful way. What's also important to realize when you're trying to tackle any new skill, doesn't matter what it is, it will not be just a linear climb from, you know, bottom left, upper right. But if you know in advance that those are coming, then you can have a plan for it and weather the storm. So that's also very important. If people expect some kind of, like, linear incremental progress, it just ain't gonna happen. And so most people quit before they hit any real inflection points.
And how does one know what to pursue? Like, how do you decide what's worth pursuing? Is there a framework for knowing what should be on the Sunday shelf and what should be today's work?
I do think about this a lot. And I've used this for a very, very long time, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Understanding the nuances of compartmentalization and its dual effects is essential as it sets the stage for the next discussion. As the conversation shifts, the impact of trauma and emotional suppression comes into focus, highlighting how such experiences can manifest in both personal and professional realms, shaping lives in profound ways.
And from that day onwards, she had all the symptoms of someone who was abused. She was had sleep disruption, health disruption, all these things.
Yeah.
Because she had suddenly, as you use that term, reconceptualized actually what had happened there.
Yeah.
This made me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people who have been abused are those who survive and do well afterwards in some way are become very good by force, by necessity, at compartmentalizing. And if you look at some of the very, very top tier military special forces units and so on, the percentages of those guys who've been abused, very high. Now, why would that be an asset? Well, if you're in battle, if you're in a chaotic environment where people are dying or at risk of dying, and you need to act effectively and calmly in the most disruptive, unpredictable environment imaginable, compartmentalizing is a superpower, right? Where you can basically detach and take this observer status, almost as if you're watching yourself doing kill and capture raids or whatever it might be. But when some of those folks come back to civilian life, the compartmentalization is a severe handicap and disruptor in family life. So that superpower becomes a super weakness. And I think that that is true outside of the military for people who survive abuse. They may bury it, completely, put it under lock and key subconsciously, so they don't even have explicit recall of the event until perhaps there's some triggering catalyst that brings it back up. They might just say, hey, look, that happened. It's terrible. Like, no need to dwell on the past. I want to move forward, which I think, frankly, is a viable strategy. I don't think everyone needs to go, you know, put on their hazmat suit and unearth everything bad that has ever happened to them. I don't think that is automatically productive or helpful. Can make people really despondent because you can't fix the past, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say that in my case, that compartmentalization was on some levels very enabling. I could outlast, out-endure a lot of people in sports and work. My pain tolerance was incredibly high, but there is a price to be paid when you cauterize certain aspects of yourself and disallow certain types of emotions. Like, there are prices to be paid. And I will say that I think the potential and promises of psychedelics by and large are overstated. But in terms of bringing emotions back online, that was almost entirely due to psychedelic experiences for me.
Bringing emotions back online.
Yeah. So I hadn't cried in like 20 years, couldn't remember the last time I cried. And then I'd be like on a plane watching a really compelling, kind of heart-wrenching documentary and just start crying on the plane. I'd be like, what the fuck is going on here? What the fuck? And certain emotions just came back online. And I think that once those were online, that is in part what then pulled along with it this revisiting of these high fidelity memories. And then I had a very rough period because of that and ultimately decided, you know what, like, this is the lead domino that has already been tipped over that has affected so many things. I can continue to do patchwork, like remediation with Band-Aid solutions for various things, but I'm plugging holes in the side of the boat, not asking why it's filling with water in the first place. And I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to take 6 months. And I know psychiatry is pretty messy, but priority number one is to try to find some resolution with this. And that's what I did. I canceled everything because I was having basically like a nervous breakdown and wasn't sure I would be able to sort of function in a business capacity anyway. So yeah, quite the adventure. Quite the misadventure, but you know, you play your hand the best you can. So having a podcast, having the books, having a blog has actually been incredibly therapeutic for me in finding some way to extract value from those experiences. And let me just mention this because I don't make anything from it. If people are going through any experience like this, or if they've had a history of trauma, you can just go to tim.blog/trauma, and it's got the conversation with Debbie. It's a hard conversation, but it also has a list of resources, because what I used as a toolkit and what Debbie used are completely different. So you get two very different perspectives on things. And I would say if I had to pick one other blog post in this case that I was the hardest to put out, and also that I think I'm proudest of, it would be Some Practical Thoughts on Suicide. There's a post called Some Practical Thoughts on Suicide. And I know directly that has saved a few hundred lives.
Having navigated a deeply personal story of mental health, the conversation pivots to innovative solutions that bridge the gap between conventional and transformative approaches. Excitingly, new concepts like bioelectric medicine and its implications for psychiatry come to the forefront, revealing how future treatments might redefine mental wellness.
I believe it's very, very minimal. It's 2 minutes twice a day, I want to say. Maybe it's 5 minutes twice a day. And that seems to have just a downstream collection of benefits or potential benefits. Most of the research for gammaCore is for, I believe, migraines and or cluster headaches, in terms of published literature. Or option B, which has a lot more in terms of published studies, would be auricular, so ear stimulation. And that's stimulating something called the Simba concha right here. It's a very particular location.
If you're not familiar with red light therapy, it works by using near-infrared light to target your skin and body non-invasively when you go to bondcharge.com/diary and use code DIARY at checkout. All products ship super fast. They come with a one-year warranty, and you can return or exchange them if you need to. And I tell you what, it scares the hell out of me when I look over in the office late at night and one of my team members is sat at their desk using this product. I asked my assistant Sophie to find me a reliable security system for my new place in LA. What she discovered is that most available options have the same issue. They're reactive and only take action after someone has broken into your house. Right now, my audience can save 60% on a Simply Safe home security system at simplysafe.com/DOAC. That's simplysafe.com/DOAC. To save 60% on a Simply Safe home security system, there's no safe like Simply Safe. Before the Diary of a CEO was what it is today, it was just an idea. And it started with me, a cheap plug-in microphone, and my Mac right here. And I have to say, when I first had the idea for the Diary of a CEO, my thinking was that the world might want to see into the diaries of some of the most interesting, successful people really in high places that were doing interesting things. So after recording that first episode under my duvet, I sat on my Mac, which is from our sponsor Apple, and spent hours editing. And eventually uploaded it, and honestly, I thought that would probably be it. But a couple of my friends said they enjoyed it, so I kept on recording. And over time, the microphone has changed, and we now have this incredible setup here. But the thing that has stayed the same is I'm still using the Mac. Even today, my entire team across our studio still uses the Mac. Our first few episodes maybe had tens of people listening, but now tens of millions of people tune in all over the world, which is still absolutely crazy to me. So if there is an idea that keeps tapping you on the shoulder, this is your sign to start. Your great ideas start on Mac. And you can find out more at apple.com/Mac. Because of what you do and because of the way that you are in terms of your broad curiosity, and the way that you think and the way that you learn, I have to ask you the question, what is it that you see coming down the pipe, like coming down the line in terms of macro trends? It probably makes sense for us to just stick with health for a second. You've talked about vagus nerve. Is there anything else that you think 10 years from now, everybody's going to be doing, but they're not currently doing or thinking about? One of them I'll throw out there is something I've been thinking about is air quality. I think I see a rise in people's concern about CO2 levels and also outside air quality. So I imagine I'll be wearing some kind of device or my iPhone will be telling me about the air quality in the room or outside.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I think bioelectric medicine is a big category. So whether it's accelerated TMS or focused ultrasound, where you might take something that looks like a hockey puck and put it over your liver, for instance, or spleen to affect various things. Using microchips over pills, I think is going to be a huge growth area, and that we'll realize more and more how much is dependent on the immune reflex and different types of communication mediated by electricity that can be affected by external or internal devices like an implant. So for instance, I'll give you a wild factoid, which is people may have heard the story, which is based on real science, where you transplant the microbiome from, say, obese mice into lean mice, and those lean mice then become obese just by transplanting the gut microbiome. If you sever the vagus nerve before you do the transplant, that doesn't happen. They don't become obese. So what's happening there? It would seem that the microbiome is communicating with the brain vis-a-vis the vagus nerve. And when you sever something experimentally in that way, or ablate it or whatever, oftentimes, and this might seem paradoxical, but you can achieve similar effects with stimulation that you can with severing. And I think many of the assumptions that we have currently, which form the bedrock of our quote unquote understanding of mental illness and so on, are just going to be completely false. They're going to be completely untenable within 10 years. A lot of that, I think, is going to be driven by a better understanding of the body electric. It will be driven by better understanding of how fuel utilization in the brain drives many different psychiatric conditions that can be mitigated or completely addressed by, say, providing an alternate fuel source instead of glucose ketones. That would be just kind of a simple example. But there's a huge, huge compliance issue with the ketogenic diet. People don't want to do it for a lot of good reasons. So how do you get people to stick with it? Well, maybe there are other options for achieving ketogenic-like effects, such as systemic anti-inflammation, with the use of electricity instead of diet. I think that's possible, and I've invested in a few companies that are aiming to do that, which is very exciting because it means that you might have options for affecting brain function that do not require you to take molecules that get into your brain directly. That's really exciting. So bioelectric medicine, I think, is going to be a very exciting space to watch.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.